This is KUT Weekend for the first weekend in June. Thank you for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier, and here's what we got for you this week. Five noteworthy things about Rick Perry's new campaign for president.
The question of every candidate will be this: when have you led?
An amazing rescue story from the flooding in Central Texas.
As soon as I showed up, I saw a guy tying a rope to a tree.
And in Austin's all-boys middle school, how young men are finding and becoming role models.
She's showing me like what it's really like to be strong and to really, really care about people and how they want to feel.
Those stories and a lot more in this edition of KUT Weekend. But first, please leave us a review in the iTunes store. Helps us out a lot. If you have any questions or comments about this podcast, you can email news@kut.org or send me a message on Twitter. I'm @KUTNathan. You can email me too, nathan@kut.org. And I also want to take this time to tell you about another podcast that I've started listening to every week. It's a KUT podcast. It's about the presidential race from a Texas perspective. It's called The Ticket. And it's hosted by a couple of guys who are pretty knowledgeable about the subject. KUT's Ben Philpott and Jay Root, a reporter for the Texas Tribune. You can find that podcast, The Ticket, in the iTunes store, or go to KUT.org and click on podcasts. It was a big week for Rick Perry. Speaking of presidential contests, the former Texas governor has officially begun his second attempt at winning the Republican presidential nomination. He made his announcement in North Texas on Thursday. KUT's Ben Philpott covered Perry's first run for the White House, and he was struck by at least five things about Perry's kickoff this time around.
Number one, the decor. It was absolutely the first thing you noticed when walking into the airplane hangar where Rick Perry would join the presidential race again. Just behind the stage, and taking up most of the hangar, was a C-130 transport plane. It's the same type of plane Perry flew in the Air Force. And standing in front of the plane, on stage with Perry, were military veterans from several different wars, including Navy SEAL Marcus Luttrell, who's the author and subject of the book Lone Survivor.
He survived a savage attack on a side of a mountain in Afghanistan, losing his three teammates. And I might add, 16 fellow warriors were shot down trying to rescue him. He is not just the lone survivor to Anita and me. He is a second son.
It's clear Perry plans to play up his military connections in this campaign much more prominently than last time. The second big striking thing, it was more what he didn't say in his speech. There was no talk of the sanctity of marriage, which is code for opposing same-sex marriage, no abortion, and only a passing reference to Obamacare. Those were replaced by foreign policy, energy, and, surprise number three, attacks on Wall Street.
Capitalism is not corporatism. It is not a guarantee of reward without risk. It's not about Wall Street at the expense of Main Street.
From Democratic candidate Bernie Sanders to conservative firebrand Ted Cruz to Rick Perry, everybody hates Wall Street in the 2016 election. And Perry picked up that theme, but he also wants to lower corporate taxes and overhaul Dodd-Frank, the country's major banking regulation law. So who does he want to fight for? Oh, but Wall Street wasn't the only item on the attack menu. Most of the GOP field has started going after the presumptive Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton. Perry stuck with hammering the Obama administration, along with a fourth striking thing: attacking senators.
The question of every candidate will be this: when have you led? Leadership is not a speech on the Senate floor. It's not what you say, it is what you have done.
That line is almost definitely aimed at fellow Texan and fellow GOP presidential hopeful, Senator Ted Cruz. But you could easily throw in Senators Rand Paul and Marco Rubio as well. As the speech ended and the crowd began to clear out, I was struck by one final thing. For all the talk of the oops moment, or Perry being a retread candidate, he can still draw a crowd. The press area was bursting with state and national media. The crowd itself was pretty big, although after being governor for 14 years, he could have easily filled the hangar with just his political appointees. And while he's entering the race just barely ranked in the top 10 in early polls, Fox News host Sean Hannity was there to do an interview right after Perry's speech. The big question now is whether the energy and excitement from day one will translate outside of his home state. Reporting in Addison, Texas, Ben Philpott, KUT News.
All those heavy rains we got in Texas are flowing downstream and causing the Red River to rise sharply in Arkansas. So as we record this on a Friday, emergency officials are asking more than 200 people in Garland City, Arkansas, to evacuate as water threatens to undermine a levee along the Red River. So the number of storm-related deaths in Texas since Memorial Day weekend is up to at least 32. Authorities have recovered more bodies, including those of a girl and her grandmother and great-grandmother. They were all in a minivan swept off a flooded road southwest of Waco. The flooding in Texas also set the scene for acts of heroism. And as the waters receded, some of those stories have begun to surface. One of them took place early Sunday morning on Memorial Day weekend on River Road in San Marcos. Daniel Navarro and his stepfather, Chris Gutierrez, were searching for a family member, and they came across a woman and her three children stranded in their car in the floodwaters. Navarro and Gutierrez tell us what happened next.
We were actually running to Bug Lane. It's about two blocks away. And before we could get there, we saw this family that needed help.
So when we ran up to the car, I just seen a lady, you know, she was standing outside of the car door, and she was yelling, saying that, you know, her kids were in the car and she needed help.
As soon as I showed up, I saw a guy tying a rope to a tree. He was kind of scared to go out there, so I just took it from him, and then my stepdad went over there and tied it to me with a good knot. It was pretty intense. I was running sideways, fighting the current, and I slipped about halfway. I made it to the car eventually. And the mother kept screaming for the kids. I got kids, you know. She was jammed in between the door. So I went to the back door and I was able to open it. I was screaming for the little girl to come with me, and she finally jumped into my arms. And on the way back, I slipped about halfway and I went under and I was submerged with the little girl. So the whole time I was just trying to hold on to the girl but have her face as high as possible.
People just started showing up, I guess, from seeing what was going on. And so other people, you know, started helping, you know, pulling on the rope.
I thought I wasn't moving at all, honestly. A little while later, I felt the girls get lifted off my hands by somebody else pulling her off me. So that's when I knew I was close to the land.
They got the little girl off and he laid there on the ground for a while because it was such a big old fight. So I went over there and I yanked the rope off of him, and then I ran further up. The water was just getting too high and too fast. You know, we couldn't make another attempt unless, you know, it wasn't going to be possible. The rope was too small and it was too thin, and we weren't going to make it. At least my stepson got one little girl out.
And that's the only one that we could save, was little girl. And the little boy got out by helicopter. The mom and the oldest washed away with the current.
I didn't think I was going to make it. I thought this was the end. My name is Shell Perales. My youngest son, who's 7, is Joshua Perales. My oldest son is Joe Perales. And my daughter is Lakota Perales. I was scared to death. It was horrible. Luckily, I saw some land, so I tried to swim my way over there to get to the dry land. Two guys came after me. They had flashlights and they asked me if I was all right. I said, oh my God, Joe's out there in the water. I saw his head. He wasn't screaming or anything, but I don't think he understood that he was in deep water. And this guy managed somehow to be able to grab a hold of him and pull him out.
Yesterday we found out that they were all together and safe. Made me feel good because it was just killing me, and I'd just sit here and just like thinking about what else could I have done? What else could I have done, you know, to save their lives?
It made me feel great that the little girl had her family to go to.
If it wasn't for them, I don't think we would have made it.
Thank you.
It's an amazing story. That piece was produced, by the way, by KUT's Mose Bushell. The flooding also caused a lot of people to lose work. And as KUT's Veronica Saragovia reports, some may qualify for government assistance through the Texas Workforce Commission.
In the roughly 13 years that Tom Kaiser has owned I Know's restaurant in Wimberley, he's been flooded 3 times, and last month's flooding was the worst.
This water level inside the building and in the restaurant itself was the highest it's ever been.
It got 18 inches of water in areas including the kitchen and the main dining area. That meant Kaiser had to close down his restaurant for 5 days, which was tough for him, his partner, and their 35 employees.
So economically, that was a real hardship for everyone.
They offset some of the costs through the GoFundMe fundraising website and a donation from a local Knights of Columbus chapter. They raised more than $8,300 to help their employees. Despite the experience, Kaiser says he's not going anywhere.
It goes beyond, it's a good place to live. We love it here.
But not all businesses have reopened or been able to fundraise. Employees in Harris, Hayes, and Van Zandt counties might qualify for government help.
If you or your employment has been affected by the severe flooding and storms that we experienced here in Texas, you may qualify for unemployment insurance benefits.
Lisa Givens is with the Texas Workforce Commission, which is offering the disaster unemployment assistance. This money is a result of the presidential disaster declaration made through the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Applications must be submitted by July 1st, and they're available at the Texas Workforce Commission's website. Veronica Saragovia, KUT News.
It seems like almost every major weather event is closely followed by a conversation about climate change. And of course, this has been called out as insensitive by some. But for others, like our next guest, it's a tragic necessity. Catherine Hayhoe, director of the Climate Science Center at Texas Tech University. Thank you so much for joining us, Ms. Hayhoe.
My pleasure.
So, you know, these have been historic storms, at least 25 people killed in Texas. Texas Senator Ted Cruz says, at a time of tragedy, quote, I think it's wrong to try to politicize a natural disaster. Is he right?
Well, as my husband says, who is incidentally a Republican, as well as the pastor of an evangelical church, he says a thermometer is not Democrat or Republican. So when we look at the fact that the world is warmer, every season in Texas has been warming since the 1950s, and we look at the fact that a warmer atmosphere means more water evaporates out of our oceans and reservoirs and lakes and streams, so that when these storms come along naturally, as they always do, especially this time of the year, there's more water vapor available for those storms to pick up and dump today than there would have been 50 or 100 years ago. So those facts are not political. That's just science. What is political, though, are the solutions to climate change, because climate change requires political solutions. But it's a lot more feasible to say, oh, it's not a real problem, than it is to say, oh, it's a real problem, but I don't really want to do anything about it.
What are the political solutions that you speak of?
There's two types of solutions. The first is just preparedness. And I think we can all be on board with that, regardless of what we think about climate change. Because we know, for example, that flood risk is higher today than it was 50 years ago, simply because we've built so many more structures and so much more impervious surfaces. So when the rain falls, it runs off and it affects us more strongly. But if these storms are getting an extra shot of adrenaline, so to speak, from all the extra water vapor up in the atmosphere because of climate change, then the only solution to that, to prevent our storms from getting worse and worse, to prevent more and more rain from falling with them, is to put a price on carbon. Because every time we burn coal or gas or oil, it produces carbon dioxide, and this stuff is building up in the atmosphere, essentially wrapping an extra blanket around our planet, a blanket that we didn't need, trapping more of the Earth's heat inside the climate system that should otherwise escape to space. So up until now, we have no price on carbon. We can put as much as we want into the atmosphere. But that's what's causing our climate to change, and it has very real economic implications for us. So make no mistake, we are paying the price of that carbon. We're just not paying it in a way that you or I as individuals can connect to our own decisions.
I wonder, Professor, as you see increasing weather patterns and more severe weather events like the one we experienced, if you encounter less reluctance to accept the reality of climate change, and if you think that these storms might create a political environment in which some of these perhaps more costly preventive measures could be adopted.
I think that what we're seeing here in Texas, according to recent polls, is that many people are making the connections. In fact, more than 50% of people in Texas are making the connection between heat waves and climate change and droughts and climate change. Hopefully heavy rainfall will follow too. So I think there's more and more people who are getting on board with the idea of we need to be prepared for stronger and or more frequent weather extremes. Now, we don't know, for example, how our changing climate is affecting dust storms or tornadoes or wind storms. But we do know, for example, that hurricanes are not getting more frequent, but they are getting stronger. We know that our heavy precipitation is getting more frequent, like we've seen this month. We know that our heat waves are getting more frequent and stronger. And we also know that our droughts are getting stronger. So many people would agree, I think, I would hope, on the fact that we should be preparing for these. But as a climate scientist, I know what's causing all of these changes. And so just like a physician would tell you, you know, we can account for all of the symptoms of something that's wrong with us, but unless we actually attack the root of those symptoms, we're never actually going to fix the problem.
Well, doctor, then what's the prognosis for the next few years? Do you foresee more extreme weather events even still?
Texas is a land of extremes. We know that Texas is prone to floods and droughts, to hailstorms and dust storms, to tornadoes and hurricanes. That's just part of life in Texas. So we can guarantee that just as we've seen that over the past 100, 200, 500 years, we're going to continue seeing that in the future. What climate change is doing, though, is it's taking those extremes, and for many of them, especially the ones involving heat and cold and wet and dry conditions, it's stretching those extremes out. So it's making our wet extremes a bit more extreme than they would be otherwise. It's making our dry extremes a bit more extreme than they would be otherwise. And we're seeing similar patterns, not just here in Texas, but around the United States and around the world.
Catherine Hayhoe, Director of the Climate Science Center at Texas Tech University, thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
The Austin City Council voted to enact a 6% homestead exemption this week, and it takes effect this year. Now, this homestead exemption fell short of the 20% break initially proposed by some council members, but homeowners will see slight relief. KUT's Jimmy Moss explains.
Half a year into the new city council's tenure, it passed one of the promises of Mayor Steve Adler and other city council members to make Austin more affordable, though Austin homeowners may not be getting the tax break some had hoped for. Initially, a vote on a 20% homestead exemption failed. Then in a 7-4 vote, the 6% plan passed. But four council members were still worried about the cost, among them Mayor Pro Tem Kathy Tovo.
By committing ourselves to whatever the amount is, whether it's a 6% and a $5.6 million gap, or a 20% and closer to a $30 million gap, we are committing ourselves to that being an irreversible cost driver in this year's budgeting.
But Councilmember Don Zimmerman says the city can afford it. It can even afford the larger percentage.
What's driving our problem is the city spends too much money, period.
With the vote, the council expressed an intent to increase that exemption to 20% over 4 years. Non-homestead property owners will see an increase in taxes. The council is planning to set aside approximately $700,000 to help renters who might face higher rents after landlords pass along those increases. It's yet to be determined how much money the new homestead exemption will cost the city. Council still has to set the tax rate for the fiscal year 2015-2016. I'm Jimmy Moss with KUT News.
43 people have died on Austin's roads this year in a total of 41 fatal crashes. That's almost double the number of fatal crashes as during the same period last year, and it's a significant increase in the number of deaths. As KUT's Terrence Henry tells us, the Austin Police Department is puzzled and concerned by the trend.
If current trends continue, this year we'll see a huge jump in fatalities and fatal crashes over last year. At a meeting of the Public Safety Commission this week, Austin Police Highway Enforcement Commander Art Fortune said the department isn't sure what's behind the trend.
You know, people running a stop sign one area, they're intoxicated. Another person walking across a high-speed roadway, And there's no rhyme or reason right now that we can actually say, is there a structural engineering issue or a particular stretch of area? They're all over the place.
The patterns of the crashes fit those of other years. More than half involve alcohol or drugs, and most happen at night. About a third of the fatalities were pedestrians. Austin's rate of traffic deaths last year was slightly below the national rate. Crashes that don't involve fatalities were not addressed at the meeting. Austin police say if you see dangerous or aggressive driving, to call 911 with a description. Terrence Henry, KUT News.
This is the first weekend of summer vacation for most kids in Austin, but for some pools in the city, opening day comes later in the month. KUT's Audrey McGlinchey has more.
This is the sound of Barton Springs Pool on the day school let out in Austin. And it'll sound that way until cleanup's finished. At Barton Springs, small islands of drying mud float atop murky green water. The images that circulated last week of the pool as a raging river are no more. The water's receded. And in place of swimmers, we've got
just a few ducks and some divers.
Andre Mellon, his wife and son, are visiting from Cincinnati. They pulled up to Barton Springs with a bag of towels before quickly realizing their mistake. Recent flooding means Austin's most popular pool, along with Metz, Dottie Jordan, and the shallow end of Deep Eddy, will stay closed until further notice. Mabel Davis will also be closed because of repairs unrelated to the flood. The Parks Department says this year a lack of lifeguards will not affect openings, but that comes after the department set a staggered schedule to deal with the lifeguard shortage. The city says it still needs more lifeguards to cover vacation days. 10 pools will open today. An additional 12 will open on Monday, with sounds something like this. Audrey McGlinchey, KUT News.
Within the next couple of years, at least three companies will be growing marijuana legally in Texas. But the pot they'll be producing won't be used to get people high. Instead, a non-psychoactive compound of the plant will be extracted into an oil that can be provided to people who suffer from a severe form of epilepsy. It's called cannabidiol oil, or CBD oil for short, and about 150,000 people in Texas suffer from this intractable epilepsy, which doesn't respond to conventional medication or to surgery. This will happen because of a new bill adopted by the state legislature that was signed into law by Governor Greg Abbott.
SB 339 does not open the door to marijuana in Texas. The very low level of THC and CBD oil does not, even if taken in large doses, give the user a high and has no street value.
But some people are hoping this does open the door to at least medical marijuana in Texas. Jax Finkel is deputy director of Texas Normal, the national organization for the reform of marijuana laws. Jax, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I know that you're overall pleased that this bill became law, but you have some concerns about it.
Yes, I'm very pleased with the conversations that are being had up at the Capitol. It's a really great beginning for a lot of our patients. This bill does say Texans believe that cannabis is medicine, and that's an important statement. However, there are some concerns with the bill and the application of the bill.
Specifically, what are your concerns?
One of the main reservations that we have is with the wording of the bill. They use the word prescribes, and there was recently a legal decision that said that recommends needs to be used.
You're concerned that doctors could face sanctions for prescribing something that is illegal at the federal level.
Exactly, they could. And that's why all of the other states that are having functioning marijuana laws for medical marijuana use, they use the word recommends.
You're also concerned about the fact that this law will only allow for CBD oil, not the psychoactive component in marijuana, THC.
Right. It has 0.5% of THC or less in it. So it's very high in cannabidiol, which has shown to have some effect for seizures and specifically intractable epilepsy. However, that's usually used in a ratio with THC. So usually when you, like for example, in Colorado, Alexis Bortel, she's a young seizure patient that had to flee Texas to get her medicine. And now she's almost 60 days seizure free being on that medicine. She takes, I believe it's like a 1 to 10 ratio, so 10 parts CBD and 1 part THC. And that's what she needs, and she would not be able to get that medicine here.
Greg Abbott, when he signed this bill, said, SB 339 does not open the door to marijuana in Texas. I assume that you hope it does.
Well, I hope that at the bare minimum, we're going to be able to get patients whole plant medicine. I respect that that is where the governor is right now. I hope that he will continue to be educated on the plant so that he can really make an educated decision on bills that come before him next session.
And I guess I'm just so fascinated by the political strategy of marijuana advocates across the country because it's so incremental and it kind of starts with, this is for children suffering from severe epileptic seizures, and it's a form of marijuana that is not psychoactive. And so you start with this, and then it grows into perhaps it's a more psychoactive medical, strictly regulated medical marijuana. And then the step after that, the regulations perhaps become a little bit looser. All in your view, I'm sure, to help patients who are suffering from these diseases, right? But the conservative supporters of the CBD oil, such as Governor Greg Abbott, say, no, that's not the case. We're not going anywhere with this. It's stopping at CBD oil.
Well, I hope that Greg Abbott would speak to the veterans that were at the Capitol all session that need whole plant. They need that THC help with their PTSD. So I would encourage him to sit down with the veterans that have served our country and now live in our state and who have been begging for their medicine and to talk to them about what medical marijuana does for them.
Jack Sfinkel is Deputy Director of Texas Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Jack, thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Raising children, not easy. Not easy, especially if you're doing it on your own. At Gus Garcia Young Men's Leadership Academy, the all-boys school in East Austin, Principal Sterling Magruder recognizes that.
I feel it's important that I'm in the cafeteria, I'm in the hallways, I'm in classrooms, so if they can have a conversation with me that they can, because they don't have the male role model at home. They need that male role model who they can talk to.
Tahira House is raising three boys, ranging from age 6 to 14. Two of them go to Garcia. She says she's done whatever she needs to do to make ends meet, but one thing she cannot do is be a father. And as KUT's Kate McGee reports, that's one reason she enrolled her children at the school.
Tahira House is driving her boys, Jameer, Cameron, and Bryce, home from school. They stop at the corner store for some gas and a snack. That's the youngest, Jameer. At the store, Cameron, her sixth grader, pumps the gas.
When did you learn how to pump gas?
About a year ago. Yeah.
In the car, Tahira's oldest son, Bryce, controls the music. Rapper Kendrick Lamar's voice comes through the speakers. Bryce's musical taste is just one thing Tahira says has changed since he started going to the new all-boys middle school this year.
He still likes rap, but he likes like real rap, you know, like reality rap, like Kendrick Lamar and, you know, Tupac and Zero versus just like the twerk songs on the radio.
They talk about what's really going on, how they were able to get out of this type of life.
Bryce sits on his front stoop and gestures to the row of modest homes on his street in Northeast Austin. It's a low-income neighborhood. Looking around, you wouldn't think it's a rough neighborhood. But in the past year, their house has been broken into twice. Bryce says he can hear himself in the music he listens to.
As people that's had the same life situations as me, came from the same type of neighborhood as me, and now they're making millions, they've made it big, they've gone. But then they still care about what's really going on.
After years of academic failure, the Austin School District turned Garcia Middle School into a single-sex school this year. For the first time, Bryce says he feels like he has someone besides his mom who cares about where he's going in life. He cares, too.
I'm not thinking of just now. I'm thinking of the future, like 10 years from now, where I want to be, how I want to be living. I don't want to be living out here.
You know, he had leadership qualities before, but here he was able to display them and follow the lead of other successful black men and get more of a vision in his mind of what his future really can be like, more than just me telling him. He can actually see it here.
According to a 2011 College Board report, more than half of African-American men grow up in female-headed homes. Bryce, Cameron, and Jameer are no different. All three have different fathers. None of them are around.
I've been a single parent since It was probably November of 2002.
Bryce chooses to have limited contact with his father. Cameron's father has been in prison most of his life. Cameron says he kind of misses his dad.
I'm kind of mad because my brothers, they don't have their dads either, so we're basically equal.
Tahira doesn't have much contact with her youngest son's father. The male role models in her life, her brother-in-law and father, don't live nearby. At Garcia, more than half the teachers are male, and a third are African-American. Some teachers grew up in the neighborhood.
They can talk to the kids about, you know, their own story and their struggle to get to where they're at. And it really, I feel like it just helps make the vision more real, to see it in the flesh. You know, so many successful men and women that are just college-minded and not afraid to talk about it. I mean, it's on each and every classroom door, what university they went to.
1 year at Garcia has helped Cameron, too, but in a different way. This year, he was diagnosed with dyslexia and dysgraphia. At Garcia, he's been able to get the services he needs. He's also learned how to play the tenor drum through the school's drum line.
I want to be a whole bunch of stuff, but my main thing is going to be a band director.
There's been an ongoing conversation at Garcia and nationally about the crisis around young black men. Another College Board report found that in 2008, nearly half of 15 to 24-year-old men of color who graduate from high school end up in prison, unemployed, or dead. Tahira is determined to make sure her sons don't fit that statistic.
Hopefully they won't have to go through some of the same things I went through to learn the same lesson if they just listen to me, you know, because I'm constantly talking to them. We talk all the time about everything. And right now, Bryce seems to be the most receptive to what I'm putting out there.
Having just my mom around and her having three kids, no dad in the house, she's showing me like what it's really like to be strong and to really, really care about people and how they want to feel.
Tahira and the boys usually return to Garcia every evening for a neighborhood track practice. She watches as her sons stretch and run sprints and reflects on her two sons' year at Garcia. She hopes her youngest son gets the same opportunity.
I'm hoping that the school will stay like this and stay on maybe an upward path, not go back down to what I hear Garcia was before. So they'll be here for when the baby's ready to come.
This summer, they'll continue to run, play the drums, and practice football as Cameron prepares for 7th grade and Bryce heads to high school. Kate McGee, KUT News.
That's KUT Weekend for the first weekend of June. Thank you so much for listening. You can subscribe to this podcast at weekend.kut.org. We've got links for the iTunes Store, for RSS, for SoundCloud, Stitcher, etc. Tell your friends about this podcast. Word of mouth is the best form of advertising. And if you have any questions or comments, email us news@kut.org. Ask me on Twitter. I'm @KUTNathan. Our theme music is by RAC. Thanks again for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5 and KUT.org. Thank you.